coming up to Lag BaOmer, I figured we should go through the actual Gemara. That Gemara that everybody knows is Rav Shimon bar Yochai, to get an understanding of what we're getting into, why Rav Shimon bar Yochai has this type of a chag, and why we spend it in such a weird fashion, meaning going out into the fields, playing ball, etc. Where does it all come from? So look at what it says over here. The last word in the line is Va'amai, maybe 20 lines down. It says, Va'amai karu le Rosh HaMedar B'chol Makom. Why was Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Eloi, the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, why was he called the Rosh HaMedar B'chol Makom, the first to speak everywhere? T'yasu Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim Gabayu. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon were all sitting together. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, all three Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. They were sitting together. Yehuda ben Gerim was by them. Now the time period of this was probably around the end of Hadrian's reign, around the Bar Kokhba rebellion, could be a little bit before that, but around that time, because after that there were two emperors that were tremendous for the Jews, and Rav Shimon bar Yochai did not live very much past 150, 160 of the Common Era. So around this time, should have been around Hadrian. Pasuk Rabbi Yehuda v'Almar, Rabbi Yehuda got up and said, Kamanoyim Ma'asein Sholom Azu, how amazing are the things that the Americans have done. I realize we're talking about the Romans. How amazing are the things the Americans have done. It says, Tiknu Shvukin. They've made malls. Unbelievable. Malls, movie theaters. Unbelievable malls and movie theaters. Tiknu Gisharim. They made highways. Highways that go through the entire land. You can do anything on these highways. They have unbelievable infrastructure made for roads, etc. Tiknu Merchatzos. They made water parks. They made Great America. They've done awesome things, absolutely awesome things. Rabbi Yehuda was so happy. He went around, he told everybody, I was so happy about it. Rabbi Yossi Shosak. Rabbi Yossi was quiet, didn't say a thing, did not say anything at all. Nene Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai v'Omar. You see the wording of Nene. He got up to speak, he got up Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and said, Kol ma shetikna l'tikna l'tzorach ha'atman. Are you kidding me? The Americans are not doing this for us. They're doing it for themselves. What do I mean by that? Tiknu shvukin. You know why they made malls? You know why they made movie theaters? Lahosha ben Zonos, for illicit relations, for terrible things that go on in both. So they can show you things that are horrible, so that you can do things that are horrible, so you have relationships that are immoral. That was the entire reason why they made malls and why they made movie theaters. Merchatzos, you know why they made these water parks? And to go ahead and have this? La'ad ben Atzman. The pshat is that they just wanted to do physical things. They have no shaykhis to their spiritual side. They wanted to forget about Ruchnius and only do Gashmius, get involved in pleasure in any which way. That's the reason why we made all these great Six Flags and anything. It had no shaykhus to any form of Ruchnius. It wasn't just for a break. It was for them to live that way. Gisharim, highways, lito mem mechis. It was all for them to get taxes and to make money off it. How much money do they make off those toll roads? The toll roads is a certain amount of money, but they make millions, billions of dollars every year off those toll roads. He said, that's the reason why they really did. You have to understand what they're really doing. Rabbi Yehuda's looking at it and saying, amazing, they're doing amazing things. All this stuff is amazing. And Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai said, look deep down, look into what they're doing. Don't you see that there's something is behind everything here? And they didn't really do it for any other reason other than their own ideas. Now, Halach Yehuda ben Gerim Sipur Divrayim, Minishim Lamalchus. Yehuda ben Gerim then went and told it over to other people. I mean, come on, if you were there sitting with three of the Gedolei Hador, you probably also would have gone around and told other people what had happened. Yehuda ben Gerim was not a bad person. In fact, in Tosfos over here, it says it's Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai sends his son Rabbi Elazar to get a bracha from Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim when Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim was leaving yeshiva. Probably happened before this story happened. But Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim, when he was leaving yeshiva, he was walking away, and Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon got a bracha from Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim. So he was a special person, not just Stam, you know, another guy. He was a special person, Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim. But he went and he told their words, V'nishmu l'malchus, eventually was heard by the Roman government. The Roman government heard about it, and they obviously were not too pleased. Amr Yehuda she'ila yisala. Rabbi Yehuda, he went ahead and praised us. He gets to be praised as well. He'll be the Rosh HaMedar B'chol Makom. He's the first to speak anywhere. First word in line, Yossi, she'shosak. Yossi was quiet. Yigla Tzipori, he's going to get gullus. We're throwing him in exile. We're exiling him to Tzipori. Tzipori was way up north, probably somewhere around Tzfas, although the Tzipori nowadays is not the same Tzipori as it was back then. Right, probably around Tzfas. He says he's going to be exiled to Tzipori. Eventually, Rabbi Yossi had to exile himself to Asia. That's a Gemara that happened much earlier in Bab Metzia, Nun Zayin, around Ayin Gimel Med Aleph. And then we have this, and Shimon Shegina said such horrible things about us, saying that we're just doing whatever. Yarig, such a person should be killed. Should not get involved with any of this stuff. So he and his son, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, they had to run away. They knew they had to get away from the government. So they hid by the Beis Medrash. The Beis Medrash back then was huge. There were many, many Talmidim learning, Baruch Hashem. I don't know, again, if this is before the 24,000 died, after the 24,000. I have absolutely no idea. But it was a Beis Medrash. They hid in the Beis Medrash, probably in like one of the rooms that nobody knew they were there. And Kol Yuma Hava Maisalu Deviso Rifta Vikuzit Amaya. Every day, his wife, Rabbi Shimon Bayachai's wife, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon's mother, would bring them bread and a little bit of water. Notice, even then, they weren't eating, it's not like they were eating meat and chicken. You know, they had bread and water, getting a little bit of Vikorchi, and they would eat bread together. Kitakiv Gezerita, when the Gezerita got really bad, and they knew that it was getting there, and they were looking for him, and they knew that Rabbi Shimon could be caught at any time. Amal Libre, so he said to his son, Nashim Daitan Kalalehan, the problem is that women can be tortured and she's going to give away our position. She's not going to realize the wily ways of the enemy. The enemy is going to follow her. Eventually, they're going to find us. Dilma Mitzari Lo Megalon, they're going to torture her. She's going to reveal where we are. Azu Toshima Rasa, so they went and they hid in the cave. They told her what? They told her, we're not telling you where we're going. And they went and they hid in the cave. Where were they? More than likely, they were somewhere down south. Although most people like to say that they went up north. It would be unlikely. This base measures that they hid in was likely around Yavne, which was the big yeshiva at the time. That was the yeshiva where everybody was. It's more than likely that they were hiding somewhere around that base measures. For them to have gone all the way up north and to hide in a cave up north, I don't know why. I don't know why that would have been. And the proof that they were up north, they were down south and not up north, is simply put, they said to Rabbi Yossi, you're Yigal Tzipori, they should get exiled to Tzipori. If they were up north already, weren't they already in the north? So it sounds like it's somewhere down south, and we have no idea where this is because there aren't many mountains or caves down in that area. Now, obviously, we know this. Yisrach Yishnisa, a miracle happened. Ibrilu Haruva Ve'inidamaya. Kadosh Baruch Hu created them a cherub tree and a spring of water. Once again, showing their histapkus, that they were perfectly fine with what they had. They didn't need anything extra. Cherub tastes like the most garbage food you've ever had before in your life. If you don't like sugar or anything good, you'll love cherub. That's exactly what it was made for. It was made for people without taste buds. And it's able to fill you up, but it's not able to do much more than that. It's like chocolate without the sugar. Chocolate without chocolate. It's just the worst tasting fruit of all time, although there are people that say they love it. They're lying, right? But they had both of those. Huge miracle of that cherub tree and the water being there. And the point of both is for them to survive. Not to be happy, but to survive. And then they took away their clothing. They knew that if they sat there with their clothing on, the clothing would wear out. And they didn't know how long they were going to be in the cave for. So they put away their clothing. But how could you sit and learn unclothed when you didn't have any clothes on? That can't be. So they sat up until their necks in the sand. Up until their necks in the sand itself, which obviously was not good for their moisturizing, you know, their moisturizing things. But I'm assuming that was really, really bad for them. So it says, even then, Kulio Magarsi, every day while they learned, right, they sat there and they sat with their necks up to their necks in the sand. Be'id and Sluya, but when they had to daven, three times a day, Lovshu Michsu. They put on their clothing, covered themselves up, Umatzel, and they daven that way. Which tells us a little bit about our own davening, right, that when we daven, it shouldn't just be that you're wearing whatever you're wearing, there should be something extra. Now, it's difficult. That's difficult to do, especially if you wear a suit all day long. How do you change it for davening? That's why people have a gartel or something different. It used to be that I had a tie that I just used for davening itself. I stopped using that. Instead, I put on my hat because I don't wear my hat all day long. But something a little bit different from davening, because that's what they did over here. They understood davening is different. Then they put their clothing away, keichadol livlu, so they wouldn't get worn out. Esvu tresar shani b'marasa. 12 years they spent in the cave. What did they do? Well, that you have all the different opinions. Likely, they did, you know, Soda Satora, the secrets of the Torah that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai learned from Rabbi Akiva. Likely, they were involved in what now is known as the Zohar, although it wasn't written in Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's time. It's written in, unless he wrote about himself in third person, right? It was written by someone later, maybe in the next generation, perhaps a little bit later than that, although the written form of the Zohar wasn't written until about the 1500s. Right, but something that had to do with that. There is a time in Menhagim that says that's what they did in the cave for 12 years. And Asa Eliyahu v'kama pitzchah. After 12 years, Eliyahu Navi came, stood by the door of the marasa of the cave. Amar man lo de labar yochai. Who's going to tell Reb Shimon bar Yochai de meis case or batel gezerte? The Caesar is dead. All the gezeres are batel. Right, who's going to tell him? Now let me ask you. 12 years he just spent in the cave learning on an extremely high level. Could Eliyahu Navi not go into the cave itself and tell them? Rishimon, you're okay now. You can walk outside. Why couldn't Eliyahu go inside and say something to him? He had to stand on the outside of the cave and just speak to no one in particular. And our Shimon Bar Yochai had to overhear it. Had to overhear and say it. The pshat is, their Torah learning was so important for the continuation of the world that any second of batala that would happen would be, who knows what would happen? The world would be destroyed from it. They couldn't be mevatel their Torah. For Eliyahu HaNavi to go inside and excuse himself and say, I'm so sorry, I just wanted to tell you. If they overhear him, that's one thing. But for him to be mevatel them, even Eliyahu HaNavi, the Malach, couldn't be mevatel their Torah learning. That's how awesome their Torah learning was. So they heard it. It could even be that Eliyahu HaNavi stood outside and said it once. They didn't hear. And then he said it again. And he kept saying it over and over and over again until they finally heard. But he didn't want to disturb them. You can't disturb these two tzaddikim when they're like that. So they said, they went, we all know, Amar man lo di lebarichai demes keser batel gezeirtei, nafku, they left. Chazu in shita kakar bivizari, so they saw people that were plowing and planting, plowing and sowing their fields, putting in the stuff in there. So Amar, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai said, manichin chaye olam va'oskin b'chayishah. They're leaving the Torah, they're not learning Torah, which is the life of the whole world, and instead they're osik and chayishah in their own lives and what they need right there at that time. He couldn't help it. He couldn't stand it. Kol makom shenos ninei nehen, wherever they put their eyes, whatever they looked at, miad nisraf, the whole place burned to a crisp. He burned fields with his eyes. He put an ayin hara in the field, and the field was completely destroyed just from him looking at it. It didn't happen immediately. It didn't happen to be like laser eyes that all of a sudden the field went up in flames. But since he looked at it with such an evil eye, the field was destroyed. And the truth is, I don't even know if it happened right then. It didn't have to happen right then. It could have been that later on, the field was lost completely. The point is, he put the ayin hara on it, and eventually that field was going to be destroyed completely. Couldn't understand it. How in the world are there people doing anything but learn Torah? Said Rosh Hashanah Yechai. So Yatzta Basko Vamra Lahem, a Basko came out and said to them, Ahachri Valami Yatzalsam, I understand, you came out to destroy my world? Don't you think I realize that Olam Hazeh is filled with Bittul Torah? I didn't create you for this. I created you to be in Olam Hazeh for a reason. So for that reason, Chizul Amaraschem, go back to your cave. You learned. For 12 years you learned, but you have no idea how to apply what you just said to the world that you're living in. You're like in Olam Haba. Olam Haba, I don't know if it's going to be so geschmack to all of us. Olam Haba is sitting in sand in a cave with a carob tree and a spring of water. It's having what you need and not needing anything else. And they were beyond that, but we're not in Olam Haba. We're in Olam Hazeh. Hader, Azu Yesivu Treisi Archishasa. They went back. They stayed there for, as we know, 12 months. Amri Mishpat Rishayim Begehanim Yud Beis Chodesh. They said the Mishpat of any Rishayim in Gehenim is 12 months altogether. So it's time for us to go. Yatz da Basko v'amra tzumim raskam. At that moment, a Basko said to them to go out from your cave. Nafku, they left. Koecha da v'amachi Rabbi Elazar v'amasi Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, as great as he was, could still see no point to what they were doing in the world. And every place he looked at, still he gave it an ayin hara, and it was ready to be burned up. But Havamasi Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon was able to heal it and say, no, there's a reason for that. The greatness of Rabbi Shimon was to be able to find a reason for everything in this world, even though it seems to be a waste of time and bittul Torah and not part of this world. Rabbi Shimon was able to look at it and say, no, there's a reason for it. He was able to hit it. Amar lo, he said to his son, Bini, my son, Dai lo olam anivata. It's enough for the world to have me and you. If we're the only ones that are learning Torah, that's enough. Not everybody can do this. Not everybody can get involved. As the Gemara in Bracho says, there's machlokas Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and Rabbi Yishmael. Right? Rabbi Yishmael said, you can do things, right? You're v'asafta d'ganecha, you can be involved. And Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai said, v'asafta d'ganecha is the non-Jews. You should be involved in Kulo Torah all day long. But Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai now understood, Dai lo olam anivata. That's enough for me and you, right? And whatever the rest of the world does is a schus, it's a bracha, right? But that's not the reason for the world itself. Right there is our understanding of what it means, what we do on Lag BaOmer. We don't know if Rosh Hashanah Yechai actually passed away in Lag BaOmer. There's a mesorah to that. The Chassam Sofer questions it in one of his tshuvas, whether or not that actually happened. Is it a day we just chose randomly? Why is it Rosh Hashanah Yechai that we do it? Because the Zohar says that you should celebrate on the day of my death, and it seems to say that it's referring to Lag BaOmer, the 33rd day of the Omer. Whatever it is, we definitely know the 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva were done, so Rabbi Shimon represents the other five Talmidim that survived with Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yehuda, right, with everybody else that was there. But there's a pshat here. And the pshat behind this Gemara is so simple. It's so simple. It's that Reshim Bar Yochai was able to find a reason for why things are happening this way in this world. He's able to find a reason for everything that we have. And although what should we be doing? We should be learning all day long. The reality is that we can't. We're in a world where that's not meant to be. We're going to go to Olam Haba. We're all going to be in a world, whether it's after death or after Tchiyas HaMesim, where the world will be revolved around Kedusha, Tahara, and learning all day long. That's going to be our Olam Haba in some way, shape, or form. And whether you like it, and it's Gan Eden, or you don't like it, and it's Gehenim, but the Chama will be taken out from its sheath. The sun will be taken out from its sheath, from its Nartika, and that's going to be the world that we're going to be living where everything is Kula Ruchni. This world is with Gashmi. We have to realize that we have to have some way of making up our Nasa, whether that's through learning or not through learning. We have to have a parnasa. And we have to sit there and we have to say to ourselves that everything in this world has a purpose, whether it's real or not. 10 years ago, it might be even longer than that, I was giving a speech for Yeshivat HaKayetz on Tisha B'Av. And I said, I said out loud, he said, "Do you think that Olam Haba is going to be just us playing baseball all day long? Do you think that's what it's going to be? You think we're all just going to play ball and everything's going to be fun and it's going to be fun and games all day long?" And I remember a Rebbe came up, Rabbi Eli Ginsberg. I don't know if you know people, Rabbi Ginsberg here, his brother, came up to me and he said, "If baseball's in the world, there's a purpose for it." He was a student of Rabbi Victor Miller. He's listened to all Rabbi Victor Miller's tapes, and he also spoke to Rabbi Victor Miller while he was still alive. And he said, like, baseball has a reason. There's got to be a Siva behind it. What is the purpose behind it? And it just got me thinking. It was sitting there and saying, he's not trying to tell me that Olam Haba is one big baseball game. That's not the point. That was not what he was trying to say. He understands that there's something, but there's a point to it. There's something to it. There's a reason why it's out there. And even if it's just to hone your skills, those who know, who can understand a game of baseball, to understand that there's a strategy behind it and what the pitcher is trying to do versus what the batter is trying to do. And some batters, the skills are immeasurable. You can see these guys, they have the greatest skills in the world, but they overthink their at-bats, and they cannot bat because of it. They can't get a hit because of it, because they overthink it. He's going to throw me a fastball right now. And then he swings really quickly, and it's a changeup, and he's, you know, just a little bit behind. Or he's going to throw me, like, a sinker. And he's looking for the sinker, and the sinker goes in the outside corner instead of the inside corner. All of a sudden, he's hitting in the wrong way. It's a chess game. You want to use it for that? Maybe you can use it for that, to be able to use and hone your chachma, hone your way of understanding the way things work. But there's a purpose behind it. There's something behind it. And part of that is what we do on Lag BaOmer, that we take a break from our studies, those that are in yeshiva, which is the strangest thing in the world. It's exactly against what Reshim Bar Yochai stands for. Reshim Bar Yochai learned all day. So what do we do on the day of his death? We party. We go outside and we don't learn. We bottle. Hey, what are we doing? It's the wrong day. You want to do it on Lag BaOmer? Go do it on Lag BaOmer. You want to do it on Lag BaOmer? Do it on Lag BaOmer. But on Lag BaOmer, the day of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, you're going to do the exact opposite of what he stands for. And the pshat is, and what this Gemara is telling us is, no, this is what Reb Shimon Bar Yochai stood for. He understood at this point that there was him and Rabbi Elazar, and there's the rest of the world. And the rest of the world needs something. And if that's what you need at that time, then you should use it. Utilize it. Do something with it. Make it something huge. It should only be baseball, because every other sport is not worth your time. But it should be something. Something which you're gaining from it and doing something to get yourself to the next level. And that's what he's trying to say over here of what happened. And then the Gemara says the most unbelievable thing. And that afternoon of Erev Shabbos, first line is Shabbosa. He saw an old man. He was holding on to two hyssop branches, two branches of hadassim, holding on to those two things. And as he's going, he was running. He was running in the evening of Erev Shabbos. I know it sounds strange. Running ben hashmashos means it's already Shabbos. He's running on Shabbos. But back then, and even in Europe before the war, many Hasidim held that Tzeisa Kochavim was the beginning of Shabbos. Not what we do, which is Shkia, begins Shabbos. There are others that said Tzeisa Kochavim was the beginning of Shabbos. So Bein HaShmashos, even though it's dark outside, was still Erev Shabbos. Still Erev Shabbos, it was not Shabbos yet. Sounds strange, right? And that was one of the things that the Satmar Rav and the Rav Moshe argued about when the Satmar Rav first came to America, that they started Shabbos at Tzeisa Kochavim. Rav Moshe said, "We don't do that in America, we do Shkia. We are Minigam Makom. Is Shkia." and it changed everything. But he was running Banish Mashos, and he said he had those two, and they said to him, they looked at him, and they said, Omalei, Hani Lamalach, what do you need these for? What are you holding those two things for? Omalei, he said to him, L'Kavod Shabbos. L'Kavod Shabbos, I'm doing this L'Kavod Shabbos. But Sagi L'Bachad, why don't you just have one? Why do you have to have two branches? Chag Keneged Zachar, Chag Keneged Shomer. Because one for Zachar, one for Shomer. So first of all, this is a lesson that everybody should always buy flowers for their wife on Erev Shabbos. That is an absolute chiyuv. I'm pretty sure that's midoraisa. I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure that's midoraisa. But second of all, when you buy those flowers, make sure that you buy them and not your wife. Because your wife, if she buys them, and you say, like, honey, you can spend however much money you want, she's buying them for herself. You will buy them for Shabbos, and also because your wife likes flowers. You'll tell her, I've gotten you flowers, and you will fool her for the rest of your life. Because the real purpose behind those flowers are for Shabbos, L'Kavod Shabbos, but also for her. And try to get two. One for Zachar and one for Shalom. You don't have to get two full things, get two branches, but it is a chiyuv for Shalom Bayis. And then you're Mekayim, the Kavod Shabbos. And listen to what he says. As soon as he saw that Amalei Lebrei, he said to his son, Chazi kama chaviv and mitzvah Yisrael. Do you see how beloved mitzvahs are to Bnei Yisrael? Look what they're willing to do. They make up these chaps that they have. Granted, they can't learn all day long. They can't do that. They're not going to be able, this man is an Amaretz. This man is, who knows who this guy is? He's an unnamed person. He gets into Shas by default, right? Not by name, not by anything. Can you imagine? He's that guy who's up there in Shemaim. He's just like, son, that was me. I had the two hyssops. I was running home, and I met Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Elazar when they came out of the cave. And that's the guy, unnamed, unanything. He's not anything out here. But it's that Yosef Datayu. And their minds were settled. They said, you know what? There is something to this world. There's something that we can have in Olam Hazeh. There's almost like, I don't mean to say it this way. I have expectations from all of my kids. But I can see that certain kids already, even though some of them are still young, or certain kids, I have higher expectations than others. I'm expecting this kid to do X. I don't expect this kid to do X. If he does, amazing. I just don't think he's made for that. I think he's made for Y. So subtly as I can without him realizing this, right, I push him toward the direction where I think he'll be most successful. Other son, you know, like push him in the direction where I feel he'll be most successful. Certain ways he'll go this way, that guy will go that way, and I'm trying to push them in the direction that I think each one will be able to do. At that same time, does that mean that I love one son over the other? The one that I think is going to be a tremendous Baal Ian, that he's going to be able to sit there and learn and maybe be a Magid Shir one day? Does that mean I love him more than the other? No. I love both of my sons equally, and I understand that they're kohos, that each one of their strengths, but they should play to it. And then, as long as they're playing and they're doing the best thing that they can do, then of course I love them the same way. And what Shimon Bar Yochai is looking at is just that. The fact that this guy thought of something and said, I'm bringing flowers to represent Zachor and Shamor in this world. I'm getting flowers and I'm bringing them in and I'm using it for Zachor and Shamor. That was a chop that no one else came up with. He's the first person to do that. That gave HaKadosh Baruch Hu a nachas ruach as much as, that's the line, I shouldn't say as much as, in a way equal to, for that person, as Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Elazar learning for 13 years in a cave. And that's why it's mentioned at the end of the Gemara over here. To tell you what a nachas ruach you can do, no matter what you have in this world. And that's part of what we do. The whole thing is based on that. The next part goes into this as well, but we can stop with this for right now. But it's an idea that we have a purpose, and this world is a purpose. Don't forget that there are reasons for everything. Don't forget that you also have a huge role to play. No matter what you do, no matter what you have in this world, everyone has a massive role to play. And that, I think, is the lesson behind Lag BaOmer. We'll stop that, guys.